Hey, this is Jeremiah Johnson. We're here at Rock Paper Podcast with Chris and Shane. Glad to have you. Tune in, people. Come on. Woo!
Sometimes it's the simple things that make a man break down and cry. Sometimes the simple things keep him alive. Sometimes it's the simple things that make a man understand exactly what he's got at home every night. Setting sun on her face, the way she danced about the place. Friday night on Friday, you pulled me close and laid me down. Saturday on barbecue, two for me and one for you. Fireflies in your hair, the shooting stars as we stare. Sometimes it's the simple things, sometimes it's the simple things you do for me every day. Sometimes it's the simple things, sometimes it's the simple things you do for me every day, every day. Lay in bed and laugh all night. Sometimes wrong, but always right. A compromising beauty queen who still believes in a dream. The taste of chocolate makes you smile. You smell the roses and you close your eyes. Sunday morning homemade jams, a sweet caress and gentle hands. And I wanna thank you, woman, for finding me exactly what I've been fighting for. Sometimes it's the simple things, sometimes it's the simple things you do for me every day. Sometimes it's the simple things, sometimes it's the simple things you do for me every day, every day. And sometimes it's the simple things that make a man break down and cry. Sometimes the simple things keep him alive.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 40. My name is Chris Buter.
I'm Shane Presley.
Happy New Year, as always. This week we have musician Jeremiah Johnson invite us into his place, which is very nice. I like the bobbleheads behind you. It's kind of a nice little setup back there. Enjoy it. But thank you for having us out on this freezing cold night. It was like 3 degrees, I think, when I looked last. It's cold. But how are you doing, man? Thanks for...
I'm doing great, and welcome to Soulard, and welcome to my place.
Yeah, nice. You have a good New Year, holidays, all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, New Year's was great. You know, it was the first time I had played a New Year's Eve show in probably 2 or 3 years, I think. And it went without a hitch. It, you know, it's one of those things where we sold out all the tickets before the show. So All you had to worry about at that point was making sure the PA worked and you didn't, screw up. So All the worry was over.
Right. It's always nice when you, like, got a
when set, you know, like, it's sold out. It's like, good. All right, great. But our New Year's Eve was amazing, man. It was a lot different than any other New Year's Eve show I've ever done, because it was the first time that we actually rented a theater and had a real show, you know, so versus it being at like a venue or where they have TVs and all this and that. Right. This was in a theater where they hold plays.
Oh, wow.
So it was completely a unique show. You know, it's like there's only like 100 and something people in the venue that it holds, and they had a balcony with like 30 people and then like 70 so down at the bottom part. But what a great crowd and what a great night. It's such an intimate show when you do something like that. It gave me a lot of respect for some of the guys that are doing these bigger theaters like Fox Theater and all that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get only have so many seconds between songs. You know, you have a big clap. But other than that, the theater is dead silent. You know, there's no other noise. There's no pool cues, no pool sticks.
And, right.
I mean, so you literally have to make a quick decision. Am I going into the next song? Am I going to talk? What am I going to say?
Yeah.
Should I get a drink of water? Do I have time? You know?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's probably more of an intimate feeling. You mentioned that. Is it? Do you kind of prefer a show like that that's compared to even a bar scene or a bigger venue? Or is it, well, I guess, to each they have?
You know, they both have their own benefits. You know, when you're doing a show like in a theater like that, you know, everybody's seated, you know, as if they're watching a movie or something, you know, going to a show. And so you don't have the crowd's not dancing and stuff.
Right.
So that's a little different, you know. I mean, it was really nice to feel the eruption of applause in between songs and, you know, your occasional clapping for solos and so forth.
Yeah.
But it's a different element. When you're in a venue like a bar or just say we're playing that down at Beale on Broadway, and, you know, it's summertime and the place is hopping and you got 20, 30 people right up on the front of the stage dancing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a whole different deal, you know.
Sure.
We get our own show then.
Right.
You know, like drunk chicks falling over in front of the stage.
Right.
And, you know.
It's a mutual show.
I'm watching these people and, you know, so that's a whole different thing altogether.
Yeah. Was it at all, like, intimidating, or did you have any more, like, anxiety or nervousness playing?
No.
Or maybe you don't even get that at all, but just didn't.
You know, I don't really get nervous anymore at all. Even, you know, I don't even know that I would say that it's definitely not intimidating.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. It's almost as if I get driven to perform even more, you know.
Yeah.
It's a weird deal. Like, you know, when we went to New Hampshire and played at the White Mountain Boogie and Blues Festival this last fall, that was our second year there. And, you know, we had problems at the airport, or we didn't have our car, our rental wasn't there, and we ended up sleeping all night in the airport on the stupid benches, and basically made it to the venue with literally 1 hour before we were supposed to start playing. So we spent the night in an airport, drove for 4 hours or whatever it was, and then, okay, you got 50 minutes and you're going to start. But on something like that, there's 5, 6, 7, I don't know how many thousands of people out there.
Yeah.
And so when you feel this adrenaline and this, like, okay, we came all this way, it's time to do it now. You're either going to put it, you know, show them something, or what are you going to do? You know, so it's a check. It's checking yourself. But I don't ever get nervous. You know, I tell you what, I get more nervous, you know, like when I was at my sister's wedding and I had to talk to everybody. That makes me nervous.
Right.
You know, those kind of things like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's almost just like a second nature performing. You just, like you said, you just turn it on. And I heard a good quote. I can't remember who it was. It was like, you know, you can either get or why even get nervous? You're going to have to do it anyway. You might as well just go out and do it, you know? Like,
and that's true if you can convince yourself of that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. You know, it's not really nervous. It's a weird thing. You know, so much going on in my mind whenever I'm playing that you would be shocked to know what I'm thinking about. Like, I'm singing and playing and a lot of that is almost sometimes it's automatic.
Yeah.
My brain is thinking about, is this amp set right? Is this pedal set right? Something doesn't sound right with the monitor. I'm trying to look for the engineer who runs the monitors. I'm thinking what song we're going to do next.
Yeah.
How's this going to flow into this and that? You know, everything but the song.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, not the entire time, but
yeah,
a good portion of it is your brain's thinking about your next two steps.
Yeah.
Worried about something about the way the drums are mic'd, you know, like it's really it's crazy, man. You know, believe me, you're busy up there,
right?
Know?
Yeah, it's interesting how much stuff actually, you know, a lot of, I mean, I'm sure as a from the audience, it looks up and they're like, okay, well, they just got some stuff set up, a few mics, but it's crazy how much actually goes into it and how important it is to get everything.
Yeah, and the part about it, that really sucks is that, you know, we're not huge artists or nothing. I mean, we're not like Madonna or somebody, you two, that can just go hire your own people that learn where you like things set and all this and that, you know? Right, like when Rush goes out to play, I doubt they're too worried about the way the PA sounds because it's their guys, they hired, they've done it a bunch, they know it's going to be right. When we go out to a festival, typically we're using the back line that was provided by the venue, which means their amps, their drums, their stuff. And then we got to trust them to give us a good mix. And then usually you get no sound check on that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And it makes it difficult. Trust me, I have played so many. I can't even tell you how many shows I've played where I couldn't even hear my guitar. I mean, the mix was so screwed up on the stage that I couldn't hear what I was playing. But once again, I've been doing this so long that I pretty much know what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, I got an idea, and if it doesn't sound right, you got to keep smiling. You got to keep act like no big deal, ain't nothing wrong up here.
Yeah,
you know,
right. I guess the best thing is to show that nothing is, because you know there could be 100 things going wrong, but as long as you don't show it,
then the crowd typically won't notice. Now, some people are really, you know, musicians, or they understand the business, and they'll notice. Man, something screwed up with this and that, you know. Right. But most people, though, as long as you keep it rocking along and you're smiling and or jamming or whatever, you can usually float it on through, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's trippy.
I'm curious, just because looking around, how many guitars do you have? Because it looks like you have a ton. Are you a collector, or is it just...
I wouldn't call myself a collector. I mean, I collect instruments that I'll use, you know. I don't have the money to collect guitars, you know what I mean? It's like, I certainly... And I really don't see the point of having more than one kind of a guitar.
Right.
In other words, I have an ES-335 over there. I don't need another ES-335.
Yeah.
How much different can it really sound?
Right.
Right.
And just because it's maybe a different year or color.
Yeah.
You know, who cares, man?
You don't need a blue.
I don't need to color coordinate my instruments or whatever it is.
What color shirt am I wearing today?
Is it a blue day?
It's
a blue
right.
day.
Right. Well,
you know,
is this blue good enough? I don't know what it is. And he didn't go on that day because he didn't have a guitar. No. But, I was just curious because
the reason that I have as many as I do is simply that, you know, we're going to talk about my new album, the Grind album. But when I went to the studio to record that album down in Memphis at PM Music, Pete Matthews' studio down there, Devin and those and Pete basically said, "Well, I know you think you're just going to play your Gibsons, but we got something for you here. We're going to do..." Like, I ended up playing 5 different guitars.
Yeah.
And literally, they kind of walked me through what tones they wanted with which guitar, which is something that I had never done before. I'd went in there and recorded the songs in previous albums with the one guitar, with one tone, and went through it, you know, went through the whole record. Well, after doing it and hearing how nice I thought it sounded, well, then shucks, I'm forced to go buy some guitars. So I had to go out and get a Stratocaster. I had to go out and get a Telecaster because I didn't have any Fender guitars. I was always a Gibson man, you know. It was the SG and the ES-335. And then I got a couple acoustics here, too. So I don't know. This acoustic over here, this Martin... That's one my mother got me when I was, a teenager, and it's about a $3,500 guitar.
Oh, wow.
And I can't believe she was silly enough to buy it for me at that age. But so that one I don't even really take out and play out. You know, I don't want to see anything happen to it.
I'll say it's got probably the sentimental value too.
And then the other acoustic's a Guild, and that thing's roadworthy. You know, if I really had to, I could hit somebody over the head with it and wouldn't be too upset about it. I mean, I'd be $1,000 down, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk about Grind now. Just before we started recording, you were kind of talking about, recording some of the vocals on it and how you use kind of a learning experience because, you know, you had to kind of learn to not just almost belt it out every song. You kind of had to sing a little softer. So, I know we heard of it. Just explain kind of that process with...
Well, basically, it's the first time that I ever had somebody in the role of producer that had a control over the sounds and what they wanted out of the songs. separate than myself. You know, I'd always produced my own stuff. And so with that, part of what was done, what Devin Allman did, Devin Allman produced the record. Pete Matthews also, he was the engineer. He didn't produce it, but he played a big role in what the record sounds like. If you don't know who Pete Matthews is, by the way, he's got a Grammy Award because he is the producer and engineer for Evanescence album that went real huge.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd say he did knows his stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, part of what they did, besides telling me, you know, walking me through different guitar sounds and different tones, used two different amps also, by the way, was that they were coaching me in the vocals a lot more than I was ever used to. Normally before, you know, the engineer that I had hired, he would say, that's great, or he was basically checking to see whether or not I was on the note, whether I was flat or sharp.
Yeah.
This was different. This was Devin and Pete were in there going, we want an emotion, a certain emotion out of me. It had to be on, you know, couldn't be a flat or sharp or anything.
Right.
So when it got to some of the mellower songs, I'm so used to belting out because I can be kind of loud when I sing. That when we got to a song like Simple Things, it's such a mellower tune that they had to really coach me to just sing real soft, almost like just above a whisper type singing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd ever done anything like that, you know. So that one was probably the most stressful song on the whole record and the hardest one for me to sing because it was putting me out of my element.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing, though. I think a good producer can get things out of you that you didn't even know you could do and push you to places that you maybe didn't know you had the talent to go that way.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of what happened with that song, you know. Like, I know for a fact a lot of my fans, when they first heard the album and they heard that song, they were shocked, really, because it was such a different type of song than everything else I've done. Although I have had ballads on other albums, but it did have a different feel to it, you know. So it was exciting to have someone coaching a little bit on the vocals and, you know, trusting somebody else. I kind of felt like the whole time with Devin and producing it, when he told me he wanted to do it, I was like, all right, well, I'll give you control over it. You know, I'm going to give you 100% control. If you say that you want me to do this song or whatever song, when I went to him, with 20 songs, you know, and we ended up with 10, you know, that we went through that he thought he wanted for the record, you know? And then several of them sounded completely different before I sat down with him, and he wanted them to be a different feel altogether.
Yeah. Mm.
And so that was a trip.
Yeah.
You know, one of the trippiest things, the craziest thing that happened in the studio is a song on the new record called Gasoline and Smokes. It's a really old song that I wrote a long time ago. If you have heard it on previous versions of it and you've heard the one now, they're totally different tempos, a totally different feel altogether. That's because in the studio, on the fly, Devin is like, why don't you try it this way? And do it completely different than I'd ever played it, ever.
Yeah.
And that was a real challenge. You know, like you play a song, you've been playing it one way for 15 years, and then all of a sudden somebody says, hey, man, why don't you play it like this, you know? And then you play it, and then but guess what? You're in the studio.
Yeah.
You're on the clock.
Yeah.
Right.
You got a Grammy Award-winning drummer, Yanrico Scott, sitting behind the drums. He's ready to get it going, you know?
Yeah.
And so we had to adjust and do it on the fly. I mean, literally, when you hear that song on that record, that's the first time I ever played it that way.
Wow.
Ever. The same thing with Call a Taxi. Call a Taxi had a totally different vibe to it before. He wanted it more rock and roll and the tempo up. I was doing it more J.J. Gray and Mofo style, you know, a little bit more funky, kind of slow, funkier thing.
Yeah.
So, and we did that on the spot in the studio, changed it right then. I never got a chance to rehearse that. I never practiced it one time. It was bizarre. But by the time we got done with the record, and all the recording was done, it was still ready to be, needed to be mixed. We didn't even know the album, you know? It was like, it was one of those things where we had to learn the record.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had to take it and go back and see what they kept, what they didn't keep.
Yeah.
You know, three of them were completely changed on the fly in the studio.
Yeah.
So I had never sang them that way, never played them that way. And it was kind of like, okay, yeah, well, here we go, right. You know. But in the end, though, man, it was a wonderful growing, learning experience. I think the record turned out great, and I'm proud of it. I'm glad people like it. You know, I think that so far, you know, it's doing really well. You know, we're getting, since it's been picked up on Sirius XM, on B.B. King's Bluesville, you know, it's been taken off as far as, you know, iTunes sales and, you know, record sales and, yeah, you know, our merchandise on our website, which, are, by the way, is thejeremiahjohnsonband.com or jeremiahjohnsonband.com.
Yeah, I see, you got pretty active on Facebook, and I see a lot of people taking screenshots of their, or
yeah,
pictures of their radio with playing So Damn Good and,
yeah,
and stuff. So that's got to feel real good to see it coming from all over the...
all over the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome when people do that, you know. It's just neat because when you record music, you know, you hope people hear it, right, you know. You know, you have your own opinion of whether or not you think it's good and, you know, this and that. And you just hope that there's a big enough percentage of people who are fans of that style of music that will like it, that you can make a living playing it and people want to have it in their CD player or, yeah, jam it on their headphones or whatever. And it's a real blessing to feel like, well, I guess people like it after all, and I'm really glad, and all this work was worth it, you know.
Right. Well, it's cool too, like, you know, like you said with Bluesville, that the fact that they are playing more, you know, independent artists a lot too. Like, there's been sometimes I've heard some stuff on there, and then I'll go online and like their Facebook page or whatever, and there'd be like 1,000 likes. So you know that they're, you know, still, right, relatively new at this, or they haven't really got the popularity yet. But obviously through Bluesville, they're probably, things are gaining quickly.
Right.
But that's fun to see that they're doing that, because like, there's not a lot of those radio stations around that are just picking. I mean, we got KDHX. I know they play some.
There are a lot of really great and wonderful independent radio stations, yeah, but the difference is with Sirius XM and B.B. King's Bluesville in particular, is that it is showcasing you nationally all at one time.
Right.
Okay, you know, like KDHX 88.1 here in St. Louis is one of the coolest, best stations ever in the, yeah, world, you know, and I think a lot of us know that already. But even at that, you know, and we made their top whatever list of most plays this year, 2014, of the Grind album.
Yeah.
I don't remember what number we were, but the point is that it still only reaches so many people.
Right.
When you get on Sirius XM, you know, that's a huge step for you.
Sure.
You know, like, for example, we're at a point right now where we're really, really, really getting close to where we're going to try to, you know, go out on tours and get all around the country, which we've done quite a bit of so far, but we're looking at, we want to do 200 dates a year,
yeah,
and we want to be on the road, you know. Unfortunately to all the St. Louis people, I'm sorry, but we're not going to be playing here that as much as we were before, but we're, yeah, gonna, when we're off, we'll be here and we'll play,
yeah,
yeah.
But the point I'm making it with the radio Sirius XM is that now these cities that we're trying to play in, for example, we're going to Houston, Texas next weekend,
right,
guess what? People down there are hearing it on Sirius XM. They're also hearing it on 90.1 KPFT down there, mm-hmm, also. But it's getting heard, you know?
Sure.
So I think it's a wonderful thing that they are playing independents and bands, like you said, that maybe people haven't heard about, because it gives them a chance to, you know, to try to make a name for themselves and get out there, you know?
You're getting invited to like more like festivals, and you mentioned the other stuff. So you getting, is that, I'm sure that's helping too, like people getting to know more your name and.
Yeah, it's really cool that you can, that we're getting invited to go. You know, like we're going to Florida to Bonita Springs in March, and that's a big festival down there. And you know, it's just cool that people are hearing it all over, and that it looks like there's an opportunity that I'm actually going to be able to go do this now for a full-time living. And,
yeah,
and you know, I may not, you know, it's, I'm a simple person, you know, I've been a blue collar guy all my life, you know, and the statistics are against me. you know, once you're born into whatever you're born into, typically you're going to end up being whatever you were born into. Mm-hmm. And I was born a blue collar guy. I'll probably always be. So I don't have to make a lot of money. You know, I'm not used to having a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't see how I can lose. You know, I mean, I already, you know, don't really make a lot of money. You know, it's not like I'm going to go out and I'm passing up on being a CEO of some company or
yeah.
I'm leaving some $100,000 a year job, you know. Shoot,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I think it seems like now with in music in general, it's not so much the goal of making tons of money because there's not a ton of money to be made. It's
no.
Now if you have the opportunity to tour for a living or play music for a living, essentially.
Exactly. It's being happy.
Yeah.
It's living life happy. There's a song on the new record called Working, and that's another one that they've been playing on Sirius XM a lot too. And basically, you know, the line is there, are you working for a living or are you living for the man? Mm-hmm. And that's basically the essence of it. You know, when going to this crap job and being treated like crap and being forced to take a freaking piss test, which is insulting because I feel like I do a great job every day. I'm not on drugs when I'm working or anything like that. I think it's kind of rude of them to act that way to me.
Yeah.
And then the same people that implement those rules, they're not having to take piss tests.
Yeah.
The people that are up front in the front of these companies that are the CEOs and the people making the big decisions that can totally crap the whole company, they're not on the freaking drug screen.
Yeah.
They can do whatever the hell they want. They could be out there doing lines of cocaine and then trying to negotiate a contract. You know, the whole company goes down a crapper.
Right.
You know, I'm just a small guy. Well, let's piss test him.
Oh.
You know, that's annoying.
Yeah.
That really is annoying. And so, in other words, to be free of all that crap, to set your own schedule, you know, I'm a pretty motivated person, so I don't, you know, I'm not one that if I was off, you know, or I didn't have a time I was supposed to clock in, I'll get up. I want to get something done. I want to do what you just said. You know, I want to tour. I want to play my music.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be rich to do it, you know.
Right.
I just want to get by. I want to have a place I can call home. I want to have vehicle that has tires on it that ain't gonna go flat on me.
Right.
You know, I want to be able to eat. Yeah. You know, I want to have my Harley Davidson. I want to keep that. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I don't. So it's pretty simple, but you know, it's a tough battle.
Mm.
You know, it's tough to do. You know, any young artists out there that are really interested in becoming musicians and making it a career, you better love it because you know the people that you see that occasionally artists that just explodes, you know, and within a year or two, they're huge and they're making millions. Those people are one in a billion, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that barely ever happens. The rest of us are freaking playing crap gigs, you know, for years and years and years, man.
Yeah.
And trying to get something going, you know.
Sure.
It's tough, man.
Yeah, and I would like to think, too, that those who do hit that pedestal, like millions and tons of money, don't have as much freedom as you guys do to creatively, you know. Because
well, that may be true too.
It seems like there's
they might be little puppets, really.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot more at least hands in the, you know, dish of saying, well, this is how you have to look, this is how you got to do, this is what the sound you're going to do. Where, I mean, there may be a little bit of just because it is still a business, you know, there's still a marketing side to it. But you, I would think, or should have a little more opportunity to be able to express creatively your own things and not have to worry so much about.
That's true. I currently don't have a label yet, and by not having a label, it does allow me the freedom to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Well, and two guys that are, like I said, doing the work for years and years, grinding and trying to get it done, those are the ones that stick around though. Like the people that come up quick are usually go down quick too. Like
that's true.
Like they, so
they're only around for a little while.
Yeah.
Well, I guess slow and steady is the route that, you
That's
know,
right.
And I, you know, I always think, you know, as long as I'm doing a little bit better than I did last year or a little bit better than I did the last album, it, you know, then I'm doing good.
Sure.
You know, since I've moved back from Houston, Texas, I lived in Houston for 10 years. And since I moved back, I think it was 6 years ago, you know, I've steadily taken this band a little bit further along every year. You know, we haven't taken major leaps, you know, or anything, but we're moving forward, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you roll that snowball around long enough, right, it eventually gets big. You know? Yeah. You know, and hopefully you find a hill and it'll start going downhill a little for you. Sure. So you ain't got to push so hard, you know.
Right.
And so I'm just keep going, man. I don't really know what else to do. At this point, it is a long time ago, I said to myself, I'm doing this. I don't care what happens. I could end up with nothing. Mm-hmm. I'll have my music and I'll be able to say that I gave it hell, man. I gave it everything that I have. And no one will ever be able to say I didn't do it. And if anything, people who know me will say, that guy gave it everything he had. He tried and never gave up.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's any message that I could send to people out there, you know, it is, don't give up on your dreams. If, you know, I mean, be smart about it. You know, if you... You know, you want to be a ballerina and you can't freaking stand on your toes. Well, maybe you need to reset your dreams.
I learned that lesson the hard way. I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about music.
I was wondering why you were hobbling.
Yes,
but you know, I don't know, man. There's no secret to this thing, man. It's all a big mystery. It's you know, everybody does it their own way. But I do like to believe, like I said, that the people that do just keep trying and work their way up slowly, you know, you eventually end up in a place where, you know, you're not going to fall off the mountain so quick. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's too, you put in, I mean, because you do have to make it essentially a full-time job, even if it isn't necessarily your full-time job, even if it's not paying the bills right away. You do have to put it in as if it is, because
it is a business. I mean, effort. I am the Jeremiah Johnson Band LLC, man. Yeah. I, you know, look around. I got LLC. All this guy. I got boxes of t-shirts, man. Yeah. And I've cleaned this up so you guys can come over here. Oh, I mean,
appreciate it.
I got freaking CDs stacked up everywhere. I got freaking counters on the wall. I got bunches of filing cabinets and my computer, and I got all this stuff, you know, that, you know, it. I have to work on that every day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have somebody on staff that does all my Facebook stuff or, you know, well, actually I do have somebody who's helped me with it now, but I don't have anybody who creates my posters. You know, I had to learn how to do all that stuff. I mean, golly, when you start doing this,
it's more than just playing music, right?
I can't tell you how many nights that, you know, I'll go to my day job and come home and I'll work on whatever it has to do with the band until midnight and then have to go to bed and be up 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, that's not being up till midnight, have to be up 5:30 and I played a gig and had fun and had some beers and all that.
Yeah.
That's sitting here doing stuff on the computer, working and packaging stuff up, you know, designing stuff, figuring out, that's all the business part of it, you know? And, you know, if you're going to succeed, you have to have all those bases covered.
Yeah.
And when you first start in there, no one doing it for you. It's you got to do it.
I was going to say, is that something you kind of learned just along the way, is all this stuff? Or does anybody kind of give you tips along? I mean, I'm just curious, because there is a lot that goes into it that probably just off the top of my head, I wouldn't even begin to scrape on what all this
stuff is. Well, you know, I think that most of it is stuff that I learned along the way. You know, but I was in sales for a long time, and I actually was a general manager at one point of a retail store.
Oh, okay.
And I was pretty good at sales, you know.
Yeah.
Like I trained people how to be better general managers of the stores.
Yeah.
But a lot of those skills, I think, kind of came over, you know,
customer service
type skills, and that, but also marketing ideas and how I saw how they marketed things, how they put together their whole pitch and all this and that. Well, it's sort of the same thing. You're selling yourself, you know. You're selling, hey man, check this out, and you try to find out who your audience is, and you try to figure out, well, what would my audience like? Not just musically, what kind of shirt would they like to wear? You know, those things are, you know, get a little crazy.
Yeah.
But one thing I did was I just said, well, you know, I really like this band and I like what they do.
Yeah.
And I researched those bands. I looked at their websites. I looked at what they did. I looked at their posters. I checked out everything they did, and I made notes of, said, okay, I'd like to do this too, or I like this idea, or these five bands that are my top favorite, they're all doing this. I better do that.
Yeah.
You know? Act like you know, if you want to be a compete with the big dogs, well, you better learn what the big dogs do.
Sure. Right.
You know, Now it's getting a little better because I have a team of people now. Yeah. Like, I actually have about 5 people that work for me. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a lot of the load off.
Be able to delegate things a little more.
A little bit more. Yeah. Like, I don't have to focus so much on each thing. I still am focused on everything, and I'm still involved just as much time.
Yeah.
But now more stuff gets done more efficiently.
Yeah.
You know?
I bet that's something, too, just because I've worked retail management, too. That's probably something you pulled from there, is being able to delegate and realize that as much as you think in your head, I can get all this done because it's me doing it, you realize how much stuff there is. And when you can delegate and take that, you know, assign tasks and get done more clues. So I'm sure you pulled that, too.
That is one of the skills that I did pull from there. And, you know, it's also recognizing somebody who's good at it, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can have your girlfriend manage your social media.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, your girlfriend might not necessarily do the best job of it, you know? So it's not just having somebody do it. It's finding somebody who knows what the hell they're doing.
Right.
<Yeah. laughs> You know, but those people don't come out of nowhere. It takes building up people who believe in you. You know, like, everybody who's on my team totally believes in this group and believes in what we're doing. And, you know, of course we pay them money too, you know, but they're not doing it for the money. I'm not paying them enough that it's like a career or anything. So, you know, as you're building up your band, you know, you find people that truly believe in you and want to help. So, you know, I think that I've been blessed, you know, to have that, but I would not have had that if I wouldn't have worked so hard and be such a hard worker in the first place. You know, I think that it really makes it happen for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you kind of earn the right to
bring
these people in and get that help because you've probably established the foundation of what you're doing, and then you're able to kind of pass on, this is how we're...
Well, in essence, you're leading by example. Yeah. You're showing them that how much you are dedicated to something and how much you're willing to work to make it happen.
Yeah.
And then by doing that, people see that and they believe in you. It's a trip, man. I tell you, there's times where I sit down and I go down to the bar after doing all this crap, and I sit down and I go, man, I sure could have had a little easier life, you know? Like, I could just be chilling out on the couch, man, you know, watching football, playing fantasy league, man, and my girlfriend or my wife, and bounce my kid on my knee, and, you know, now, not that that's easy. That would be a real challenge, but... But I don't have any of that, and what I do, you know, I just every day work towards this goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, man. It is. I'm happy about it. I'm happy I'm doing it, but it is a different lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's a different deal, and it's not all partying and all this and that either. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Although I do party.
Make sure to take care of that. It's cool. Well, I think too, and we're almost in a. I mean, we're kind of fortunate to live in a time where we have a lot of resources that we can do things on our own. Like,
geez.
Even 10 years ago, some of the stuff that's here today wasn't even relevant. It's just, I mean, that doesn't hurt, you know, to have even social media or being able to, you know, do shirts or whatever, you know. It's just, it's incredible that a lot of people, that's why people are taking it on themselves, because, you know, they don't have to go through a company to do certain things or have to be at a certain status to do things. They can do so many things on their own. Even just, I mean, I see a little kind of a recording setup. That's huge now. People can, I can record something on here, which may not, they won't sound good, but I mean, like, I could record a guitar on here, and it's just.
I did an entire album on that little thing over there, man. I did the acoustic record down in Houston, Texas, called Red, White, and Blues on that thing. And to those of you who got the album or check it out, you know, that was my first shot at it. I'm sorry, I did the best I could. I do, like, it turned out all right, but I was a novice at it at the time. You know, it's funny to think back when I first started playing music and had a band. You know, I've had a band and been in a band since I was, you know, maybe 16, 17 years old, you know. Mm-hmm. And back then, we didn't even, there was no internet, and then, you know, they didn't even have cell phones, man.
Yeah.
You know, the only guy I even knew had a cell phone, in high school was a drug dealer, and he had one of those big had one of those big brick things that sits in the middle of the car, and it still had a cord on it. It looked like a regular phone.
Yeah.
But it was in the car on this big brick. Yeah. You know, so like to go from that, where literally the only way you could promote your band was to make up flyers and run all over town and stick them up everywhere or whatever. That was the only way.
Mm-hmm.
Or a radio commercial. Or you could if you were real big, I guess you could do TV, but you didn't do that, you know? Yeah. And to what we have now, I mean, these guys learning to play guitar today have an incredible advantage. And they probably don't even realize it. You know how you know how hard it was to pick out the lead to a certain song that you loved back in the day?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you're not great yet, you know?
Yeah.
So you're not real. It's not like you can just go, oh, that's this note and that note and that's this scale. And you get. Nowadays, you can pull up any song on the internet. Yeah. And there's some fool out there who learned how to play it. Yeah. And he'll show you the tablature and show you how to play it. I didn't have none of that.
Right.
And none of that.
Yeah.
The best I could do, is what I did do, was take guitar lessons, you know, and found good teachers, and then, you know, whatever, go get Guitar Magazine, you know, and have that delivered, and every once in a while they'd teach you the new song, or this song, or that song. But now, it's incredible the tools they got.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I remember going on, guitar tabs, either, or just looking at guitar tabs when I was trying to learn guitar, and yeah, I mean, they have it lined up, but yeah, now YouTube any song, and how to play this, and there's a guy showing you there, and then he's like, okay, and then here's the tablature for it, and you can print this out and put it on your iPad, and it'll play along. I mean, it's crazy,
right.
All the different
it
stuff.
It is crazy. Yeah. And the thing that even if your skill set on the instrument is not great, you at least are playing the majority of the notes are right. You know what I mean? So you're getting better, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we didn't have none of that stuff. We didn't have, there was no Facebook. There was none of that crap.
Right.
You know, in a lot of ways, life was a lot simpler. But it didn't allow the freedom that we have now as musicians and people who have bands and so forth, like you said, to be able to get the music out to people.
Yeah.
You know, we have fans now all over the world, and we've connected with people that are going to allow us to go to the UK next, you know, this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's awesome.
All that stuff is because of the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, by being able to be connected to somebody in the UK, and do it instantly and have them come and see you play. And then, I mean, that's all because of these things, these tools we have nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, so.
There's a couple of bands I really like, and they go over and play through Europe, like Moreland Arbuckle and even Nikki Hill and Matt Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And they go over there and, like, you know, it seems like they're rock stars, like, you know, and then. They come back home, and sometimes they're, you know.
You can't fill. You can't get 100 people to show up.
Right.
I know. Well, I definitely am. We're going over there. It's already in. The wheels are already spinning and already working on it.
Yeah.
I don't know when. You know, obviously, it's not as easy as, you know, packing your stuff in the van and hitting the road. You know, there's all kinds of. You got to have permits and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Apparently, they'll find you. Or arrest you if you cross the country. No, because over there, like, one country to the next is like a state over here. You know, it's like leaving Missouri to go to Illinois.
That's
you're in another state.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, another country. Well, you make money in one country and you cross the border and don't pay taxes for it, guess what? They arrest you and they fine you the taxes for that money you made in that state.
Yeah.
So in that country. So there's a whole lot of logistics and things that got to be figured out with that. I just cannot tell you how excited I am that we're going to get to go over there. And, you know, it's not all set in stone yet. It's not, you know, but I know it's going to happen. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to will it to happen. I've got people over there that I've already got 3 venues lined up that want to be the home base for it. So it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But to get a chance to go do that and get a chance to see other parts of the world and bring my music over there. I tell you what, man, that's the proud feeling, you know.
Sure.
You know, I dare them. Bring me over there.
Right.
Come on, give me a shot at it.
Yeah. I just couldn't imagine how big of a blast that'd be to go overseas. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, the same coming to America or whatever, but there just seems like such a cool culture over there. And
yeah, and you know, over there, like you said, you know, Nikki Hill and them, which by the way, I love those guys.
Yeah.
The thing is that about it is that they really, blues music and this the kind of music that I play and that a lot of us play from America, you know, or United States, is super popular over there.
Sure.
You know, so you can go over there and sell out a 600-700 seat room.
Yeah.
You know, no problem, because the people want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and being an authentic United States, he's an American, he's, you know, he's an American singing the blues. You know, that's, yeah, that to them is like cool, you know.
I mean,
and to us, you know, we see it every day. You, right, know, we can leave right now and go down the street and I can show you a guy doing this. You know,
right, yeah, now, right.
But it's kind of, I mean, even like that was the same with Stones and the Beatles. Like they were taking blues records and, yes, doing their own thing with it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, there was the English movement and they came over to the States and were doing their thing. And then, but it's like, so that culture over there, they still love the blues sound that we have. And like, so it's just, like I said, those people, a lot of these bands that I like are going over there and they're just, you know, doing great overseas, but they come home and it's hard to get people to,
yeah,
to even show up. And,
well, you know, it's weird. You know, that's true. And, you know, it I don't know.
But
it's like, some bands, you know, can be huge in other parts of the United, yeah, States, but then in your own town, you can't sell, you know, you can't fill a room, you know. But I don't, you know, I'm not worried about it.
Sure.
I think that, you know, right now our band's doing pretty good, man. You know, I'm stoked about the music we play and the way we sound, and the people seem to be digging it. And you know, we're getting there, you know, we're getting there.
Yeah.
All I ask for is opportunity, and I'll bring my A game, you know. Yeah. I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, I'm not intimidated, I'm not scared,
yeah,
you know, whatever, yeah, you know. Just, I dare you to get me up there. Go ahead, I dare, yeah, you.
I promote a lot of your stuff. I tell people all the time about the band, and and that's how I feel. Like, it's just, for me, it's really exciting to have one of your favorite bands in your hometown that you can go see.
Well, thanks, man.
Three or four or five nights a week, you know. It's like you guys are always out there hustling and playing shows and.
Yeah, but well, trying to keep going forward. We are definitely, you know, have tapered back, you know, a lot with our St. Louis shows. You know, like I said, you're trying to take another step forward every year. This year, There's going to be some pretty, I'm hoping, some pretty decent steps. You know, I just signed a contract with a booking agency out of Florida. Actually, I signed it, I guess, Monday. Mm. And that they're a pretty big agency, and they represent some huge artists.
Yeah.
And so some things are going to change. Also, my DVD that I shot in Burlington, Iowa, at the Capitol Theater, Gary Glenn is a producer out of Australia who is a movie maker, basically. You know, he's an award-winning documentary and movie maker out of Australia. Mm-hmm. He filmed it, and he's editing it right now. Well, we're going to be promoting that all over the United States and probably, yeah, take it to Europe, too. But the funny thing about that is, it's not technically, they're calling it a docu concert.
Yeah.
It's going to be in film festivals, man.
Wow.
Like, so in other words, it's being shown in film festivals as a documentary.
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's not even really a full concert. It's the concert they filmed, but it's all, the majority of it is them interviewing me and talking about this blue collar guy from Missouri who, yeah, never gave up type thing. Hey, they asked me to do it. It wasn't my idea. But it's freaking awesome. And what I hope to do is to have the documentary, say we're in a film festival in San Francisco. I'm going to go down to San Francisco when they're doing the film festival, yeah, and I'm going to play at all the clubs around the place.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I freaking love documentaries when it's musicians and seeing honestly, like, yeah, I love seeing live show and like you know, DVDs of, but when I get, when they do have like behind the scenes or kind of more intimate stuff, dude, that's, I love that stuff. I could watch those all day just because they're interesting. It's, I mean, yeah, it's awesome to see a band play live, but to be able to see a little more into it, and especially like prep for a show or ideas behind songs, I just, that's awesome. Yeah. So I, best of luck with that, because that's,
you know, when they approached me, they approached me to do that, and you know, it was a strange thing, you know. Yeah. Somebody wants to do a documentary about you, you know.
Right.
Like, I mean, how many people does that, you know? It's like,
I've only had like 3 or 4.
I don't even know. That was not even on the list of things that I ever thought, you know, somebody would ask me to do, you know. Like, I'd never even contemplated that, you know. Like, the thought never crossed my mind ever.
Yeah.
You know, like,
you don't start a band and be like, God, dude, I hope somebody makes a documentary.
Man, someday, man, I hope somebody comes up and asks me to do, ask to do a documentary about it.
Yeah.
And so it was a trip, you know. And the other thing that was wild about it is that, you know, I've seen a lot of documentaries. I like documentaries. Mm-hmm. I realized that I was going to have to say some things that might hurt some people. Yeah. You know, some real emotions about, you know, because I'm not going to get on this thing and pussyfoot around and just sugarcoat it and give you the same crap that you get in every other interview.
Yeah.
You know, I was pouring out some real stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's probably going to be some people that are upset, you know, when they watch this and see some of the things I've said and how I feel, you know, inside. But I did what I said that I would do, and I was going to give them the real deal. That's so, you know, I'm looking forward to see. I haven't even seen the thing, you know.
Yeah.
I don't even have any clue, you know. And now I don't even remember what all I said. So, man, I'm gonna be like, I said that.
Yeah.
Oh,
but that's what's
so, no Christmas presents for Jeremiah this year.
Yeah. That's what's so nice though about like the whole documentary style is that it's, because when I, sometimes when I watch, maybe it's specials or whatever, I feel like it's produced and it's not totally factual.
Right.
Where documentaries, I feel like, for the most part, there's a clear intent to say exactly what the, you know, is supposed to be going on, and it, you'd kind of, I think, be defeating the purpose if you're like, well, yeah, who's...
Right. If you're going to script it, then script it, exactly. And then call it that. But if you're going to call it a documentary and you want to do it, then be real.
Yeah,
sure.
By the way, it's called Ride the Blues.
Oh.
And it's pretty cool. They did a lot of filming of us riding our Harleys, me and Jeff, the bass player, riding our Harleys and stuff. We actually rode our Harleys out onto the stage and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, you got stuff like Netflix and Axis.
Oh, yeah.
And Palladia and stuff where, you know, you could get this picked up and run with it.
Well, I mean, one can only hope, right?
Sure.
But, I mean, I don't know. It's just another thing that I got to do, you know, And another thing that's part of this 2015, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, either and I'm not even sure that I'm hoping that a label will come along. That's something that I've wanted a long time, so that I could, you know, God, how awesome would it be to be on Alligator Records, to be able to say, you know, you were on Alligator Records, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's almost, in a certain way, something that you've now left behind forever.
Yeah.
So when you're dead, blues fans and music fans could be able to look back. He was once on Alligator Records. Even if it was one record, I don't care if it's one song. You know, so something like, so I would love to have a great label come along and pick me up. Even, you know, it doesn't have to be Alligator. But on the other hand, you know, if I get a good enough team behind me, I can go independent and continue to do it and still have my creativity and be in control of it too. So we'll see what happens. I look at every option and analyze it and say, hey, you know, what do you want to do?
Right. Have you ever thought about starting a label or on your own?
Well, technically, I have my own production company and I have my own, I got all these. I got three companies that I start that I got. So all this stuff's covered.
Yeah.
Like in my publishing, I have my own publishing company. Okay. And I have technically my own label.
Right.
That's called Hatchet Jack Records.
Okay.
And I'm the main artist on it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Simon's a great artist, man.
It's only me, you know. But But I, you know, I did all that because I wanted to have myself covered. You know, I didn't want anybody to come along and, you know, try to steal any of my crap. Or, you know, that's one thing that, I don't let happen in my life. I've had opportunities before that I passed up on where I was gonna could have been signed by a major label, and you know, I was very young. You know, I was early 20s, and I could have. You know, I had a rock band back then, and could have had, you know, that big ticket, that golden coupon or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But they wanted, you know, all the rights to my stuff, you know, and I was gonna have to sign away the everything to them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was total crap, and I wouldn't do it. Yeah. And so they dangled the whatever you want to call it in front of me, you know, the big, here's the big deal, boy, we're going to have you all over the world. Guess what? You know, because I, at the time, I was opening up for Candlebox, Better Than Ezra. I opened up for Kenny Wayne Shepherd when he was just out. He was young then. Mm-hmm. I was opening for The Urge.
Nice.
Blind Melon, opened up for them twice. So I was doing these things, you know. Yeah. And there was that opportunity right there for me to have. But guess what? I did not sign that contract, and I walked away from all of it. Not a lot of people would have done that.
I'll say,
you know,
you're probably better for it.
I am so glad I did.
Some of the horror stories I've heard of bands that have signed those big contracts, and they're like, "We got." I mean, it's that first contract you get majorly screwed by that.
Well, they freaking own you.
Yeah.
And then guess what? They don't give you $1 million.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, if it's $1 million contract, they're not giving you. You pay that back.
Yeah, exactly.
So you may be. You could even get lucky and have a gold record. Guess what? You got to pay $1 million back first before you make a dime.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only money that those bands make is the live performances up until, you know, they make that, but they owe that money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, anyway, screw them.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's a big F you to those people that wanted me to sign that.
Right.
That's what I told them back then. And, you know, today I'm a lot, you know, I'm a lot older and, you know, a lot smarter. I would definitely take a look at the contract, but I'm not giving up my rights to my stuff. I'm not. It's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're doing all right. I mean, you said you got Grammy award-winning producer.
And drummer.
Drummer. And an Allman, Devin Allman on it. And,
yeah.
And Tom Hambridge is incredible himself. That guy mastered it, right?
Yeah, he mastered it. Yeah. Yeah, he's a legendary dude.
Sure.
Hey, you know, you're right. I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah.
But I'm the kind of person that you never let off the pedal,
right.
You know? And, you know, I'm not where I want to be, you know? But if you come back and we do this again in 6 months, I want to be able to tell you that I'm figuring out a way to do 200 shows a year, you know?
Yeah.
And then I might feel a little better. But even then, I'm probably going to be like, man, I got to do a little better, you know?
Yeah.
It's
well, you always got to have that little bit of
a little drive, man. Something you gotta have a goal.
You don't want to get
complacent with it. You gotta freaking find somewhere. It's always got to be somewhere to get to,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And then you know, whenever I get old and fall over and die, then I'll be done with it.
Yeah.
You know, then I can lay around, chill out.
There you go. Yeah. Well, hopefully, if we try and get you back on, you're like, dude, I can't be on there. I got shows lined up. I'm going to the UK next week. I can't do it.
Well,
like, heck yeah, dude, that's awesome, man.
Good. Well, we'll be able to swing you in, man. And you know, we'll get you. We'll fit you in.
Get
you guys in. I appreciate y'all coming over here today.
No, it was a blast chatting with you. And you're gonna be at Hammerstone, Friday and Saturday.
It's Thursday and Saturday. Thursday, I'm at there with the trio, and that's at 8 to 12, and that's a bring your own mug night, by the way, which means you bring a mug up to 48 ounces. They fill it with beer for $3. $3 or $4, I don't know what it is. And then Saturday we're there with the full band. Hammerstones is I think a lot of people do know, but for those who don't know, that's kind of like my home place. That, you know, they were one of the bars that gave me a start here in St. Louis. And so I always try to make sure that I still play there. You know, I have an album called Ninth and Russell. Well, Hammerstones is on the corner of Ninth and Russell.
That's what he's explaining to you on the way.
And so, you know, to me, it's a smaller place. But I love it. It's a friendly atmosphere, and they have live music there 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who can keep it going for as long as they have and then have live music every day, you know, that's the kind of place I like to go to and support, you know. So, and they're great people. The Hammerstones are super nice, man. They're cool people.
When you play Beal like once or twice a month, right?
Play Beal once, Beal on Broadway once a month. Yeah. We generally, I think, starting this year, we're going to do Moonshine Blues Bar once a month, also on a Saturday, I think the second Saturday of the month. But all those shows are tentative that I'm not out of town or I'm not, you know, other things. You know, we book them and then when we go out of town, we have to shuffle stuff around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Gotcha.
What about, and then also you, Vinny's out there at Blue City Deli?
We have stuff with him too, yeah. I don't have all, I don't know what the dates are on that, but yeah, we're hoping to do three or four of those a year, you know, and those are something that we can squeeze in anyway, anyhow, somehow, because, you know, I love going there and playing. Yeah. Anybody who hasn't been to the Blue City Deli to see a live show,
that's killer.
You're missing an amazing experience. It's a small place, great food, but the people just pack in there. It's the energy is incredible, and the food is delicious. Like the sandwiches there are over the top, and it's really that place is another one of St. Louis's gems, man. Yeah. You know it really is. We got a bunch of really cool places, and that's one on the top. You know,
yeah. I think my first time was there to see Nikki Hill, and it was packed and. The place was jumping all. It was fun, man.
Well, in the summertime, it just pours out of the door.
Yeah,
the whole outside of under the streets is filled up. You know, and that's I don't know, man. There's something about that I hope we are all able to experience, and that we continue as musicians and fans of music, people that own restaurants and bars and so forth. That we keep that alive for everybody that's growing up. You know, because it's a unique experience. Live music, man.
Yeah.
Live music, you know, with a group of people.
Sure.
There's nothing that can ever make it any cooler than that. It's like it's an experience that you share together.
Right.
Yeah. And like I've always on my bumper stickers, live music is better.
Yeah.
Well, it is. The album's pretty good, but come and see it live because now you're part of it.
Sure.
Right.
You're part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a connection there and energy that can't
The musicians...
Can't be
The good musicians are thriving off that.
Yeah.
You know, you're affecting them.
Mm-hmm.
You're affecting their performance. You're part of the show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, the records grind. What's social media? Are you on Twitter and all that?
Yeah. We are. I would do is just go to the JeremiahJohnsonBand.com or JeremiahJohnsonBand.com. I got both of them.
Yeah.
But go there, and all the links to all that stuff are there. The Facebook is the Jeremiah Johnson Band.
Gotcha.
And I have a Twitter, and I have a Instagram, and all that stuff that I don't keep up with. You know, I post stuff, but
yeah, website will link it all that. Yeah.
Man, it's just too much stuff.
Oh,
man,
it's nuts.
You could spend your entire day going to this site and that site and posting this and posting that, and man, it wears me out.
Yeah,
I listen to this comedy podcast, The Crab Feast, and they go through their plugs, and they're always promoting their dates and their website and their Facebook and Twitter, and Jay Larson always plugs his Pinterest too, which I think is funny.
Yeah,
like, just so it's like
great interior decorating designs I have there.
You can follow me on Pinterest and Snapchat and everything, you know, whatever else, and
just anything fine,
just everything now. Yeah.
There's got to be a limit to how much of that we
right.
have.
You
in
should
our
only
lives.
Allow four or three social media accounts,
right.
And then after that, you're.
Well,
have to pick and
if you want to find out anything about our music, we have a store where you can purchase our merchandise. I'm currently ordering even more shirts and stuff. That I'm going to have hoodies.
Those shirts are sharp, man.
They're cool, ain't they?
Yeah.
And I got a great designer that does all that for me, man.
They look real good.
She is amazing. Her name is Danielle.
If only you had a 3X, that'd be.
Well. I keep hearing that, and we are looking to make some.
Yeah. We got big fans out of here.
I know.
Yeah.
little fans, too. You got smalls?
We got those,
there you
too.
Go. See? And then I'm set, so it's pretty young.
I'll put a couple together.
There you go. Get them up. Sweet. Well, appreciate you hanging out with us, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Taking the time out. And
let's play a cut. What do you want to... You want to play... So Damn Good? That's the one on the radio, or do you want... You
yeah, sure.
One, or?
So Damn Good's a good one.
Yeah. I just like it's more of a sort of a more traditional kind of a blues.
Right. It was the song on the record that we decided that we were going to go with a straight bluesier song, you know. the Grind album is really a collection of a little bit of everything I can do.
Yeah.
If you listen to it, you're going to hear Southern rock stuff. You're going to hear almost some of it's just straight rock. Yeah. You're going to hear some countryer style stuff. You're going to hear like Simple Things is totally different. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to hear some blues, you know. And what we were trying to give you is a 10 song snapshot of all the different things that I do as a songwriter. It's technically a solo album. It's my first solo album. It's Jeremiah Johnson. That's why it doesn't say Jeremiah Johnson Band on the record. Sure. So what Devin Allman wanted to do was show people, hey, man, this guy can write a variety of tunes, but yet somehow it's still one band and one sound. And so I think when in that aspect, it was a cool thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I loved it. I loved the album and your shows and how the dynamics of it. The fact that, like, you know, it's not all sound the same.
Right,
you know,
I hate like, that when I go see bands and it's that way.
Yeah, so it's a roller coaster ride of a show. You kind of got your ups and your downs and your and it's, you know, makes it a lot more entertaining, I think. So
yeah, you know, I love Zydeco.
Yeah.
But when I go see a Zydeco band, I can only do about a set of it because if I can't do 4 hours of Zydeco, you know, because it's the same thing the whole time, you know. I'm sure there's people that are Zydeco fans that might be mad at me for saying that. And I don't mean to be rude. And now I'm sure there are Zydeco bands that don't sound like the same song. But my point is, if it's the same thing over and over and over, it loses my attention.
Yeah.
You know. But I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate all the kind words you had. And thanks, guys, for coming out, man. Really. You're welcome to come down to Soulard and stop by and have a drink anytime.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jeremiah Johnson, man, appreciate it.
Yep.
Episode 40. That's a wrap.
That I've waited a lifetime I'll never meet another one like you.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.